on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today is Friday, October 31st, 2025. Before we get out and about, maybe with our friends dressed for the Halloween weekend or with our kids going to get them as much candy as possible, we got a lot to talk about because the month of October is over. We are headed in to November. The final stretch is here. And before you know it, the year will be gone. And as we've learned this year, things move incredibly quickly. So it's critical in these moments to have a routine, a way for you to continue to be focused. And so we here at InvestTalk hope that we are but a small part of your journey. Our objective is for you, the investor, you, the listener, to leave each show a little bit better, a little bit more informed. Now, to that end, we have a mixture of educational and actionable material to go over today. But because the most important part of this show are your questions, let's answer one now.
Hey, Justin and Luke. Hope you guys are doing well. Wanted to check in and see what you guys thought about the company Fiserv, ticker symbol FI. Looks like it's down pretty hard year to date. Looks like they missed their Q3 earnings report. So I wanted to see what you guys thought about it, if it's a good company and possibly a good time to buy. Thank you. Have a great day.
Fiserv is a global fintech company. What they do is they provide payments and banking infrastructure help to financial services companies and to merchants. And in this time where there's a lot of competition for payment flow, right? Because this company does mobile payments, they do fraud security solutions, they do a payment platform. It's difficult to get ahead. Now, this company is fairly large. It's $35 billion. And as the caller said, it has been a very, very rough year, down 67.53% year to date, down 52% over the last 3 months alone. Q3 2025 results, far below consensus. Revenue, also below consensus. They revised downward their full year guidance for this fiscal year, and they started to have some leadership and structural changes. Now, sometimes there can be a bit of a market overreaction. But you don't want to look at a situation where you have a massive drop-off. Massive drop-off, right? A lot of this happening, well, just this week. It was trading at $127 per share on the 25th. And this is a situation where earnings were bad. Guidance is bad. Everything seems to be bad. You don't have a leadership shakeup because things are going well. That makes this a very, very, very risky time to enter this name. And in spite of the, or rather along with the poor performance over the past week, right? I mean, it's been on a downward trajectory from the beginning of the year when it used to trade at 208. And so I'm not really seeing anything that makes me say, well, yeah, now is the time to jump into this name. A lot going wrong, not a lot going right. That is Fiserv Inc., ticker FI. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this story. The go live your life rule, rethinking retirement spending. Why the so-called guardrails approach that is adjusting spending up or down based on market performance is gaining traction over the fixed 4% rule in retirement. Also, speaking of retirement, we'll talk about how, given the recent performance of stocks, should you just only buy stocks from now until you die? We'll also touch on home purchases and how a lot more of them have started to fall through, and why that could be a warning sign for the economy. Should we have time at the end of the show? Robots are taking a lot of jobs. Cities across the United States putting robots to work. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Qualcomm Incorporated, ticker QCOM, and another on the Three Buckets retirement strategy. As always, we also got some questions from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Moving to new break. And it is very likely that you will probably be making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. Before you do, I recommend that you look at our new comprehensive Q4 2025 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It's a free read, and it is posted now at InvestTalk.com. My phone lines are open, waiting for you now at 888-99-CHART.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk, but opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. As the month is over, U.S. stocks finished a bit higher. S&P, Dow Jones, NASDAQ all log solid weekly gains, with the S&P notching its sixth straight month of positive performance. The Dow up 9 basis points, S&P 500 up 26, NASDAQ up 61, Russell 2000 up 54. Let's take a look at sectors. Big tech mostly lower, but Amazon a big gainer on its earnings report. Other underperformers included managed care, pharma, oil services, P&C insurers, and waste. Relative outperformers included software, exchanges, entertainment, money center banks, and credit cards. On the bond side, treasuries pretty mixed. You did see a bit of curve steepening to end the month. While the dollar was up 30 basis points and gold was down 50 basis points, but still above that newly gained $4,000 an ounce level. Crude oil, a bit off of best levels after the president denied he was planning strikes on Venezuela, settled up about 70 basis points on the day. Earnings is really the overall highlight. Again, we're kind of in a desert of big macro data. The market today processing another round of big tech earnings. Amazon, the big gainer on AWS acceleration, as well as capacity additions and a decent amount of margin expansion. That means during the Q3 earnings season, results are still a bit better than forecast. The blended year-over-year S&P 500 earnings growth, about 10.7%. At the same time, 83% of companies are reporting a beat. That is better than the 1, 5, and 10-year averages. Did get some Fed speak, some hawkish FOMC commentary, but really not a lot of surprises there, right? It was from speakers who largely had consistently hawkish positions. There's also heightened government shutdown frustration, as well as geopolitical headlines, but the market's still saying, yeah, that's a little bit more noise than news for us. No, thank you. As I mentioned, right, we're still in this desert of economic data, so we got to hobble together various pieces of information to try and find numbers. Sell-side notes put initial claims for the week ending 25th of October at 219,000, below the prior week's 231,000. October Chicago PMI came in above consensus at 43.8, helped by solid new orders. And on trade, the president made offhand comments on Air Force One that there are no plans to reopen talks with Canada. Still no movement on the government shutdown, but a federal judge today ordered the administration to dip into contingency funds when the SNAP food aid program runs out of money November 1st. Looking ahead to next week, pretty busy period. Even before next week starts, we got an OPEC Plus meeting this weekend, another production hike expected. We have ISM manufacturing on Monday, ISM services and ADP payrolls on Wednesday, as well as the final University of Michigan consumer sentiment and inflation and expectations report, which will cap off the week on Friday. All right, let's get to a question from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. For now, as we revamp our YouTube channel, we've kind of put a pause a little bit on breaking down the show into various segments. But it doesn't mean we don't have good content over there, some evergreen content, some lessons, the InvestTalk Classroom series. And while you're over there, if you got a question, you can leave it on any of the comment sections of any of our videos, and we'll tackle that as soon as we can. This one coming in from Rich P, and it's about a Fed rate cut. It says, the Fed has decided to cut interest rates. What does it mean for investors? What sectors benefit from a low interest rate environment in the backdrop of AI? Well, lower rates means, generally, easier money and higher valuations. Cuts reduce borrowing costs. They support earnings multiples. They ease a bunch of financing stress. They often spark equity upside as liquidity rises. Now, tech, as well as some other sectors, communication services, consumer discretionary, industrials, they tend to benefit as credit flows and demand starts to rebound. Lower capital costs may also fuel AI CapEx. Think about all the money that has been spent on building data centers, chip manufacturers, power infrastructure. It could boost semiconductors, cloud platforms. It could power utilities that are tied to AI buildouts. And as yield seekers live in a world with lower rates, well, then they start to turn to bonds, to dividend stocks, to REITs, to utilities. Some of those bigger, more established dividend-paying infrastructure names. And those are just some of the effects. But you have to keep in mind that the rate cut was expected. The market doesn't generally wait for something. It is and does a very good job of pricing things in very quickly. Generally, what you're going to see in asset price movements isn't going to be, okay, Fed cut today, things are great, market's up. It's going to be what happened today versus what we expected, and everybody expected a Fed rate cut. And so when you think about these things, as with corporate earnings, right, when a company reports earnings, yeah, you care about how much money they made last year, but what is the thing that most people are paying attention to? That's forward guidance. It's the same thing here. So when the Fed cuts rates, what the market really is interested in is their projection of the path moving forward and what they have to say about what that path might be. Let's briefly review the KPP Premium newsletter. Our newest one will be distributed tomorrow. In the KPP Insight section, we discussed the Fed path moving forward. Very appropriate given that last question. In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a major global computer chip manufacturer and a company that develops and manufactures personal protective equipment for workers in hazardous environments. In the portfolio management section, we touched on understanding goals, proper diversification, and having a disciplined strategy. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and hit subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox every Saturday morning. We still have a lot of time left to go on this show before I get a chance to see if the Dodgers are going to win tonight or break my heart yet again. We got a main focus point. We got plenty of talking points. And most importantly, we got a lot of questions queued up. Hopefully, one of you will pick up that phone, dial 888-99-CHART, get to me live, on air, before we get to the weekend. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
And I was just wondering, are there any
investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend, something that may offer good resources.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about InvestTalk Innovators? It's available now free on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators.
When markets soar, retirees using the guardrails rule can start to loosen their purse strings. And when markets slide, they start to pull back. And so the question is, should you be thinking more about this guardrails rule, the go live your life rule, rather than the traditional guideline of 4%? Now, this rule, it's a dynamic spending strategy. It offers a lot more flexibility compared to that rigid 4% withdrawal rule that adjusts only for inflation. It's probably the most ideal for retirees who want a bit of confidence, but also some flexibility so that you can adapt your spending to protect that long-term security. Now, this concept was created by two guys, Jonathan Guyton and William Klinger, and ties annual withdrawals to investment performance, meaning your lifestyle, well, it tracks the market reality. Think of it as kind of like a feedback system. You spend more when your portfolio grows, and you spend less when it shrinks. Now, a typical plan sets, quote-unquote, guardrails, 20% above and below the target withdrawal rate, say, cutting spending at 6% or increasing it at 4% if your base rate is 5%. Now, it works best for retirees who have a bit of discretionary spending, travel, leisure, and luxuries, who can trim extras when the market turns south. One of the ways you can take a look at the success of not just this strategy, the potential success of this strategy, but the success of any financial plan, it's something we do for our clients, is by using these things called Monte Carlo simulations. What those do is, well, they say, okay, here is something that may happen, right? This is what we're doing. We have a financial plan. Now, there's a bunch of stuff that's going to affect my financial plan. Interest rates, historical market returns, if those empirical returns of asset classes continue. Social Security, when do I take it? Many, many different variables. Well, in these Monte Carlo simulations, you're doing a bunch of randomized trials where you're changing few and most of the time only one variable each time and giving yourself a probability distribution. It's a way to estimate the success rate of a portfolio so that you can trigger adjustments when probabilities move outside of what is determined to be the safe zone. Now, this isn't a set it and forget it strategy, right? It is dynamic, but that means that annual recalibration is also key. You don't want to react monthly. Short-term swings, especially in financial markets, can cause not just overcorrections. Maybe you cut back when you don't need to, or you go, ooh, I'm up a lot today. I'm up a lot this week. Let's go buy a Lamborghini. It can also lead to a lot of stress. But here's the catch, right? 4% is easy. This type of strategy requires not only discipline, but also a lot of active monitoring. Many retirees, well, they prefer steady, predictable. Instead of having to do this constant back and forth, instead of having to do this constant tweaking. Those who are managing portfolios alone, right, without a professional, while trying to enjoy their lives, well, they risk a bunch of errors. Maybe they cut too late. Maybe they ignore warnings. Maybe they overreact. All of which can lead to adverse outcomes, all of which can erode long-term capital. Ultimately, the guardrails rule is a guide. It's not gospel. It's meant to balance living well today with lasting security. And if you think you can deal with the discipline, the active monitoring, it might be right for you. On Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers, so let me hit you with that list right now. The two-year treasury yield is at 3.602% today for perspective. Last week, that number was 3.484. 200 weeks ago, it was 0.64. The 10-year, 4.097 today. Last week, that number was 4.003. And 198 weeks ago, that was 1.762. Gold $39.77 per ounce. That is a $136 decrease compared with last week. 13 weeks ago, that number was $33.48. And 192 weeks ago, that number was $18.06. Silver, $48.78 per ounce, 18 cents more compared with last week. 90 weeks back, that number was $22.80. 184 weeks ago, silver was $23.94. Oil was selling for $60.93 per barrel, a 57 cent increase compared with last week. 58 weeks ago, that number was $67.79. 100 weeks back, the number was $74.30. And 199 weeks ago, the number was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.04, a 2 cent decrease compared with 1 week ago. 126 weeks ago, that number was $3.56. 174 weeks back, that number was $4.25. And looking back 194 weeks, a gallon of regular gas cost $3.57. California was averaging $4.62 per gallon, a 3 cent increase compared to last week. 104 weeks ago, that number was $5.32. And 180 weeks back, that number was $5.87. For comparison, in Michigan, gas is averaging $2.98 per gallon. That is $1.64 less than gas in California. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic, emergency savings, more than just a cushion. We'll have practical advice on how much to save for unexpected life events, where to keep the money, and why it matters, far beyond simple budgeting. That's Monday, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, InvestTalk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Qualcomm. The symbol is QCOM. I'm looking to get in, and what would be a good entry point? Wanted to see what your thoughts are overall. Thank you. I'll be listening to the answer on your show.
Qualcomm, ticker QCOM, is a major player in the mobile and wireless semiconductor component space. They develop and commercialize this foundational wireless and compute technologies like mobile connectivity, through mobile connectivity and automotive across their three major segments. So chips, licensing, and strategic initiatives. They hold a pretty big patent portfolio for 4 and 5G and more. And they sell chips for smartphones, for cars, and for data centers and AI infrastructure. It's a pretty good year, up 17.76%, up 11.4% in the past 52 weeks, up 23.26% in the past 3 months. And it's a pretty big company, $198 billion market cap company. Now, in late October, they announced two new AI accelerator chips, and those are for data centers, right? They drove an 11% one-day jump in the stock. It's also been acquiring some names, some high-speed component names, and done a pretty good job repositioning itself as a lot of the market is really focused on AI buildouts. And so it really offers some good secular exposure to these growth themes, as well as being accretive in its acquisitions. Now, there's a bit of risk, right? There is some execution risk. Transitioning your business is pretty ambitious. There's a lot of competitive pressure out there, and there's a lot of demand. Now, the valuation is pretty reasonable, though, right? 14.4 times price to forward-looking earnings, 7.1 times price to book value, 15.4 times price to cash flow. You know, we own Qualcomm in a couple of our strategies, actually, because we think it is and has been a major player across the board with great exposure. So we hold it. We're going to continue to hold it. That is Qualcomm Incorporated, ticker QCOM. Let's keep things rolling and play two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
I was just reaching out to see if I could get your thoughts and opinions on the three-bucket strategy in retirement, what you think about it and how it relates, you know, to market downturns and sequence of return risk, and to see if it's a good strategy when you are approaching that time in your life. I'll be listening. Thanks.
Now, the three-bucket strategy, three-bucket retirement strategy, is a way to Well, it's a way to smooth withdrawals, right? So you take your assets and you segregate them into three different buckets. What is your short-term needs, right? Your cash, your money market, your T-bills, your short-term bonds. And that helps fund your living expenses. It helps you avoid selling your investments during your downturn. Second bucket is your medium-term income, your intermediate bonds, your dividend stocks, your CDs, and it's designed to replenish bucket one and provide stability as well as regular income. Then there's bucket three, your long-term growth, 10 years plus, your equities, your REITs, your alternatives. It's a big growth engine to help you outpace inflation and refill buckets one and two over time. Now, like I said, this helps to smooth withdrawals. It helps to reduce a lot of sequencing risk. And it helps to give some psychological comfort. It matches your investment horizons to your spending needs. I think this is a great way to go about constructing your financial life. It is one of many tools that can be very helpful. And certainly, for a lot of people, I would recommend it. Thanks for the call. Now, speaking of these buckets, right? We talk about what our long-term growth bucket is incorporates, right? Equities, okay? And because of how well they've done, the acronym TINA is back. There is no alternative. Stocks are gaining a dominant position. There's dominant global returns. And investors are starting to think, well, do I really need any bonds at all? Now, the latest push for all equity investing comes from research from the University of Missouri, Emory, and the University of Arizona. Their centuries plus data set looks at 39 countries up to 134 years of returns and finds that bonds historically across the board offer pretty poor diversification and weak inflation adjusted returns. Across the sample, bonds return just 95 basis points after inflation versus 7.74% for US stocks and 7.303% for international stocks. So the conclusion is even retirees, not just young savers, would have fared better with 100% equities, split roughly one-third US and two-thirds international. And that sounds great. But even as the authors admit, it's incredibly risky, and history is not a guarantee of future outcomes. U.S. valuations underline this risk. The S&P 500's cyclically adjusted PE sits at 40.5 times, its highest since the dot-com peak in the year 2000. Over long horizons, stocks do usually win, but in global markets since 1841, all equity portfolios lost to inflation 12% of the time. Even in the U.S., stocks underperformed bonds in roughly 25% of 30-year periods, mostly in the 19th century. Now, sequencing risk of returns, right? Two retirees each start with $1 million in the S&P 500. One in 1999 ends with $890,000, and the other in 2002 ends with $4 million. This is sequencing risk. And that's to say that you don't really know what it's going to be like when you need to start drawing down on those assets. And so the takeaway is, yes, if you look at it from an odds perspective, equities do offer the best odds, but luck and timing matter as much as discipline. And so having bonds in your portfolio, having tips, having a way to offer stability, to dampen volatility, to manage risk is still a critical component. When the market's doing well, TINA, there is no alternative, sounds like a great idea, but betting your future on it means having the patience of a tortoise and also the emotions of a stone. It's Friday. Before you begin your trick or treat antics, let's drop in another fresh listener question now.
Hey, Justin Erwin, Kurt here. Just calling. I got a couple questions. Well, two stocks in particular. One is Powell, P-O-W-L. I've held on to that stock for a little over a year now, and I mean, it's just been on a tear here recently. So I don't know why. I don't see any reason why. I feel like it's already been overvalued. So I pretty much just went ahead and liquidated my whole position, assuming that it's way overbought. And then the other day, you talked about leveraged ETFs. And I've had one that I've also held for about a year or two now, and SPXL. And I just want to know your thoughts on that. I mean, it's done really great for me. So if this is something that you think is a terrible decision for me to hold on to, then I would just like your input on that. Thank you so much.
Let's take a look at the second question, right? What are the dangers of leveraged ETFs? And so a leveraged ETF is when you have multiples of exposure to the daily return of some underlying asset. It could be a leveraged ETF that looks at the S&P 500, right? In case of this one, which is SPXL. It is the Direxion Daily S&P 500 3X leveraged ETF. Or it could be a single stock ETF that has leverage. And so with leveraged ETFs, there is daily resetting. It means that returns can diverge pretty sharply from the index over time, especially in volatile markets. You can lose money even if the index ends up flat to slightly higher. There is a volatility magnifier. Leverage multiplies both gains and losses. Sharp moves against you can quickly erode capital, and they can trigger forced selling. There's also higher costs, fees, swap costs, financing rates. They eat a performance, so long holding periods typically underperform the intended leverage target. These are designed for short-term trading. You should not use them as a buy-hold vehicle. It can lead to pretty large unintended losses versus owning regular ETFs or futures themselves. I think that the risk you have and the cost you pay is too great, and that's not really exemplified in times when the market is low volatility and has generally been marching upward for well over a year. Though we don't prepare for the good times, we prepare for the bad times. So in spite of the returns you've seen, there are still great risks to owning leveraged ETFs. Thanks for the call. Should we fit in another question? We got plenty of time.
Hello, Invest Talk family. This is Steven out of Charleston, South Carolina. I had a question about ticker symbol WINM, Winmark. I've had my eye on it, wanted to jump into it earlier, kind of put a little bit of my taxable account into it, not much, just mostly to keep an eye on it and try to pick up some change on the path of watching it grow. Let me know what your thoughts are on this company. Looks attractive. Thanks, y'all. Appreciate everything you do.
The ticker is WINA, and the name of the company is Winmark. It's a small cap, $1.454 billion market cap company, year to date up 2.57%, up 8.12% over the past 52 weeks. Now, this company franchises retail store concepts that buy, sell, and trade gently used merchandise, right? Across various niches, from teens to children's items to musical instruments. So Plato's Closet, Once Upon a Child, Played Against Sports. It also operates in a middle market equipment leasing business called Winmark Capital, but that seems to be a bit smaller portion of its business. Now, revenue is solid, but really not growing much. Only up 2.1% on an annualized basis over the past 5 years. Net income, grown about double that, 4.4%. Pretty solid there. Margins, pretty impressive. Sitting in close to 60% EBITDA margin. About 49% net margin. All very, very solid. But it's really expensive. 32 times price to forward-looking earnings. 32 times price to cash flow. 17 times price to sales. Now, the retail or resale sector, not the retail sector, maybe retail as well, but the retail resale sector is a bit of a circular economy, right? Consumer interest in secondhand goods gives Winmark an interesting thematic tailwind. And they paid a solid 50 basis point to 1% dividend yield over a long period of time. But I think my biggest issue here is having to do with just lack of growth. Lack of growth over a long period of time at higher valuations tends to put you at outsized risk of having poor portfolio returns. So for me, I think I'm going to pass on Winmark Corporation, ticker WINA. What else are we going to talk about? Well, home sales, they're falling. They're falling apart. The highest rate in years. Buyers are anxious. Stubborn sellers are starting to clash with these buyers in a housing market stuck between economic uncertainty and higher prices. In September, roughly 15% of purchase agreements were canceled. 15%, up from 13.6% just 1 year ago. And that trend has been climbing steadily throughout the year 2025. Now, this surge reflects both buyer jitters over job security and the financial strain of closing costs, taxes, and insurance that exceed initial expectations. Buyers like Trish DaCosta of Nashville, where after saving for 5 years and winning a $400,000 offer, she was laid off just before closing, had to walk away from the deal. And those types of buyers, well, they have already lost money they can't recoup on inspections, on appraisals. Even if they recover their deposit, they don't get that money back. A lot of these things are flashpoint. Repair issues surface, sellers resist big price cuts, and buyers now feel empowered to walk away rather than compromise. In one case, a $485,000 Florida home deal collapsed when the buyer demanded a $50,000 cut after $20,000 in needed repairs, a standoff that reflects a bit of the fragile negotiations of today. Sellers, meanwhile, well, they're in no rush to lower prices. Many are still holding those ultra-low mortgage rates. Instead, they're delisting these homes at record rates, up 52% year-over-year per retailer.com. And these regional gaps are widening. Florida's market, like the one in Jacksonville, shows nearly 18% of deals canceled. Long Island's, fewer than 5%. One way to get ahead of this, because of the costs, right, associated with bailing, pre-inspection reports, but those cost around $1,200. Probably a good amount of insurance, though, to protect against the $20,000 that you might have to pay if you don't see the issues. One thing sellers are doing, they're securing backup offers, trying to keep these deals alive and pressure primary buyers to close. But overall, the U.S. housing market is starting to show some uneasy signs of thawing, with a 1.5% uptick in September sales. In spite of that, the widespread hesitancy on both sides suggests confidence remains pretty fragile. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
I'd love to hear any thoughts and insight you have on the company Rio Tinto Group. That's ticker symbol RIO. So any insight you have on the company would be greatly appreciated. Specifically, if you could talk a little bit about the dividend. You guys do a great job talking about the history of the dividend, if it's been consistent, and then based on the financials, if it's likely to continue in the future. Appreciate your thoughts on that. And of course, thank you very much for the show, producing a show 5 days a week. I imagine that's a lot of work. So thank you very much for that. As a longtime listener, you give me the confidence to keep investing. I'll listen for the next show. Thank you.
Very kind words. Let's dive into Rio Tinto PLC. It is a global mining and materials behemoth. They operate in 35 different countries, and they produce iron ore, aluminum, copper, lithium, and other critical minerals. Over the past year, up about 10.56%, up 21.99% year-to-date, up 20% over the past 3 months. Like I said, very, very, very big company, $123 billion market cap company. So what's been driving its price? Well, a bit of a strategic shift. They've been emphasizing those energy transition critical minerals, copper, lithium, while still maintaining their iron ore large-scale base. And there's been a bit of corporate restructuring as well. Now, their copper production was up about 9% year over year as of Q3 2025. But it doesn't mean that all is good here, right? There's a bit of risk within this business, especially within their Australian segment, their Australian aluminum. One of their mines may be forced to shut down post-2028 due to power supply cost issues. But as with any miner, you're going to get effectively leveraged exposure to the global commodity cycle. You're going to get leveraged exposure to whatever the product is that they're selling, a downturn in iron or a downturn in copper prices or a slowdown in the global economy that would then lead to lower demand. That could weigh pretty heavily. For example, Rio's underlying earnings fell about 7.6% in 2024 due to that weaker iron ore demand. You also have those regulatory risks. A lot of these mining companies have operations in countries that have lax standards, may cause mine issues, permitting delays, cost inflation, environmental delays. And just the cost alone and the time to get a lot of these products on board. Now, you mentioned specifically, what about their dividend? Well, their payout ratio is 56, so pretty low. Their dividend yield is 5.2% right now. But their dividend was cut in 2024 amidst those weaker conditions. And so their dividend, like any dividend, is not going to be set in stone. As I always say with these miners, if you want to get leverage exposure to these commodities, this is a very solid way to do it. This is a large mining company, pretty solid fundamentals, good at commodity extraction, good at scale. And so if you're bullish on global infrastructure, if you're bullish on metal demand, if you're bullish on decarbonization, well, then Rio, ticker RIO, could be a pretty meaningful company to add to your portfolio. Just keep in mind the risks, because certainly for mining companies, there are many. Now, if you haven't already, head over to our investtalk.com and check out our newest InvestTalk Wealth webinar. It's all about artificial intelligence. I think it's a great transition from this mining company, given how much copper is going to be needed, lithium is going to be needed to power all of these technologies. We dive into not just the top line names, but the industrial, the energy names, the picks and shovels. It's all over on our InvestTalk YouTube. Just search InvestTalk with two T's. Well, that does it for us today. I'm Luke Guerrero. That is another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You can go to iTunes and Spotify. And while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and a review. As always, if today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, and whether it's all really working together, one of the best ways to figure that out is to go over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence to your financial lives. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.